Now's the chance. Jonathan Thurston kicks the Cowboys into history.
We're back once again for a bumper edition of the Market Watch podcast. Nathan Ryan and Ben Glover with you from foxsports.com.au. And this week we're doing something a little bit different. Ben Eichen's going to join us a little bit later because we've flicked him. We've turfed him for two special guest hosts. You know them from NRL 360, but you know them better from the NRL action on the weekend. We have Mick Ennis back for his second edition of the podcast and Benji Marshall
on debut,
up off the bench. Oh.
Been there before.
Do you remember your debut, Bench?
I do, mate. It was against Mick.
Oh, let's not go there.
You brought it up on 360.
Let's not go there.
Yeah. I think Mick brought it up last time he was on the podcast as well.
I remember Matt Parsons being in the middle and Benji was just floating around. No one had seen the sidestep before. And he was just coming through the middle and just they had all the momentum. And he was just coming off his left, his right. And Matt Parsons just went, someone get hold of this.
Hey, mate, honestly, Ben Kennedy got a hold of me. That's the most I've ever heard in my life. He crushed me. I was 76 kilos, by the way. He absolutely crushed me.
I think it's only fitting that you debuted against each other. And the day that Mick, you announced your retirement, you happen to be sitting opposite Benji.
I'm not retiring, by the way. No,
it is, mate. It's been a great day. It's been a really, really good day. I think it was really well run and planned out at Cronulla today, and then obviously the show tonight on 360. And looking forward to getting home and putting the feet up. It's been a big day, but it is. It's been it's the right time. It's the right time for me.
How do you know that it's the right time? Can you sort of talk us through the decision-making process? Like last time that you were here, you mentioned that you'd spoken to Anthony Minicello about knowing.
Yeah, I think I was just waiting for that time, and I wasn't really sort of asking myself the right questions. And I think probably over the last 6 weeks, I've really sort of tried to be brutally honest with myself and where I'm at. And I just think it's the right time. I feel like, you know, the little things that make my game what it is and has given me the longevity that I've had are things that take a lot of petrol out of you. And, you know, to be able to commit to that wholeheartedly for another 26 weeks next year, I just didn't feel I was capable of doing. I just felt like it was the right time now. And then away from the field, you know, my eldest boy, he'll be 10 at the end of the year, and I've got three others, 7, 6, and 2. So, you know, having to say no to them, you know, Dad's got to do this or he can't do that today. I've got to play or train tomorrow. And, yeah, I just want to be a dad. I'm looking forward to just spending some time and giving a bit back to them.
Are you enjoying training less, or do you suspect that you might next year? Is it sort of, you're almost guessing a bit that you might not have quite as much hunger to go to training and do the difficult things next year?
Yeah, I just think, I just know if I'm honest with myself, I reckon I'd get to about sort of round 6 or 7 next year and just go, oof, what have I got myself into here? Yep. It's such a commitment, you know, and it's not just yourself. There's other people that are relying on you, especially in the position that I play. And I've seen and played with guys that, you know, at that they get to that preseason and know it's their last, and then that next year they're just playing. You know, they're not actually really committed to it. They're just doing it because it's their last year. And a lot of the times they're setting themselves up for, you know, what's coming and planning, and their focus drifts away from their performance and it just becomes about just knocking out the game, and the game's become too hard to do that, especially for me and what I mark myself down for as an acceptable performance. And I just didn't want to have to look my teammates or the coaching staff in the eyes next year and know that I was playing for the wrong reasons.
It's pretty unselfish, like, when you think
100%.
About it. Because Mick's the type of guy who puts the team first. And listening to that, that's what all that's about. You know? And it'll hard because at the moment, he's at the top of his game. And in my opinion, the best hooker in the game so far this year. You know, Dally M hooker of the year last year and probably going to get it again this year. So, I mean, it speaks volumes of the guy when you're at the top of the game to be able to do that and put your team first.
What Mick just spoke about, does that resonate with you at all in terms of you ever been in a mental space where you've gone, I don't know?
Oh, yeah, but that's through the back of injury, not because I'm getting older.
Yeah.
And with me at the moment, like, I'm in a position where I could retire, but at the moment I still wake up every day enjoying going to training and being around the boys, and there's still things on the field I want to prove.
Yeah.
So I don't have that feeling at the moment, and I don't have a family like Mick to go and look after as well. So it's a lot different for me. But I think it's a bold move by Mick and something that he's really proud of.
Were you surprised when you heard the news? I was shocked.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for the heads up, by the way.
I don't think many of us got told, mate. That's good. I think it's great because the ability to be able to keep that to yourself and just let yourself make that decision when you think it's the right time. I think that's the best way to go out without having to be pushed or told that you need to go out and go out on your own terms is something that he'll be really proud of. And I know. And hopefully if we don't win it, then hopefully they win it.
All right, he deserves it. Obviously, the next question on Sharks fans' lips is going to be succession planning and players that are at the club. On foxsports.com.au, we have a story outlining the players that are waiting in the wings. Jaden Brayley's one that certainly caught my eye. He's the skipper in the under-20s. I believe he's done a bit of training with you guys. Is he the logical choice, or perhaps a Farr Brown waiting in the wings that could make that transition? What do you think,
Mick? Mate, again, it's probably too early to be too definitive, I suppose, of what they're going to do. I like the Brayley brothers. Jaden's playing in the 20s, having a terrific season, and his younger brother has just been named the captain of the Australian Schoolboys, both at hooker. So there's some plenty of talent and depth there. Young Matt McKilrick and New Brown are certainly more than capable, played plenty of first grade. So there's some options there. But again, mate, for me, that's something that I don't necessarily need to be involved in. If Shane or that come and ask for my opinion, I'd be more than happy to recommend or talk through with guys, knowing the style of football and the certain players around them like and who I think may possibly fit. I haven't really thought about it.
Being in a premiership sort of space at the moment as the Sharks are, do you think it's a different decision for Flano? Like, in terms of you bring in a senior hooker or do you bring in a kid?
Well, we're probably fortunate enough that, I think, we've still got a fair amount of seniority there.
Yep.
That he has got that option to maybe go with someone younger, whether he decides to go with someone experienced, that could possibly work too. He's in a pretty good position because we do have a pretty well-balanced side there in terms of age and right across the park from, Gal, who's, I think he's 47 on next week. Going through to Valentine Holmes that has just turned 12. So it's a fair age gap there. But no, mate, we're in a really good position there for something new, but I suppose the 80 minutes is another area too that Shane and the staff will have to look at because with the way the interchange has been for a long time, a lot of the guys coming through now have been in a system where a lot of clubs have played two hookers because the interchange was where it was, and we all saw what Craig Wing did and blokes like Kirk Gidley did, that everyone looked to make this a utility player that was either a good half, 5'8", fullback, hooker that probably just maybe wasn't big enough to play a full 80 minutes. They'd use him as an impact player and build him up that way, that a lot of the guys that are coming through the system aren't used to playing those big minutes. So, it'll
be
interesting.
You're a dinosaur, Mick.
I am a dinosaur, yeah. Don't worry, I feel like one too.
He is.
There's been a bit of talk, Benj, about Robbie Farah potentially making a move to the Sharks. From your perspective, you've left the Tigers, and it seemed like when you joined the Dragons that first year, it gave you a new lease on life. Mm. Do you think that could be a good thing for Robbie?
Oh, I think it'd be a great thing. A bit of change, especially if Jason Taylor's still the coach at the Tigers. I think that alliance needs to be broken somehow.
Yep.
And that's just not going to work between them. And you can tell that. It's obvious that it's not going to work.
Yeah.
So I think for Robbie, like it was for me, change would be as good as a holiday. And it doesn't matter where that is. Probably somewhere that's going to encourage his style of play, where a bit of movement out of dummy half and counting numbers and being able to use his left foot kicking game out of dummy half as well, I think could be an asset to a team as well.
There's been a bit of talk about the Dragons as well, being one of those clubs.
Yep. You whispered in his ear.
Me? I don't even know what I'm doing, mate. But like I said, mate, I think he just needs that change. It's sad for the fans that really love him and want him to be there. But I think for him, he just needs to go somewhere where he's going to enjoy his footy. And, for the last few years, you want to enjoy it.
You've been enjoying your, your footy midget. Oh,
absolutely, mate.
Certainly
yeah.
looks it's that way.
It's easy to do
field.
When you're winning, mate.
Yeah, no, it is. It's been a really good move for me. You know, in saying that, I had a really good conversation with Des Hasler this afternoon. His words were something that I was really grateful for.
Did he call you or do you call him?
No, Des called me this afternoon on my way in here and had a really nice conversation. And I was really glad that he did that. You know, I learned a lot under Des. But I think, you know, where I was at my career and the style of football that the Bulldogs played, Cronulla suits me a lot more. And, you know, the football that I've played since being there the last 18 months is something that I'm really grateful for. I loved my time at Canterbury. Had a ball there with the players and the fans and everything that comes with that big club. But as Benji said, you know, I I've said it before about Robbie, I think he'll always be remembered as a West Tigers legend. Mm. But, you know, you get limited time to do this. And you know, we all started as kids with this dream. And you don't want to look back on your dream has just been a slog for the last 2 or 3 years because of you were stuck with a coach that, you know, didn't want you as part of his plans. You're better off looking back at the time and going, I've had a blast here. You know, I've made so many great friends and the memories that I have here, and I'll always be remembered like that. But I'm going to go and enjoy my career and finish it the way that I wanted to.
So, Benj, you're obviously still playing on. You've made that crystal clear. What is the latest, mate? Can we get an update? Is there an update?
Yeah, there's not really an update, mate. The problem with me is I haven't been on the field consistently enough to state a case, I think. I've only played like 8 games this year, and I think the most I played was 3 in a row, and I started to find a bit of form there. And when you miss a game and you're in for a game and miss a game, you lose your, I suppose, timing, and you have to get that back again. And the disappointment of being out and trying to get through games with your hamstring, it's, you know, it all adds up. And yeah, for me, I'm not in that much of a hurry. You know, I know there's going to be opportunities in places, but I'm not really in a hurry at the moment.
When you're battling injury and you're in and you're out, does it weigh on your mind at all, the hamstring? Like we saw on the weekend, Jared Mullen, he comes back from a hamstring injury and then it flares up again. Like, is there a bit of a mental?
Oh, yeah, there definitely is a bit there. I think when you're coming back for the first time, you get a little bit of, you know, just try and get through the game and preserve the hamstring to just make sure you get through it without having to do too much. And I definitely had those moments this year. But I'm in a place now where I'm feeling good with the hamstring, and I've opened up a couple of times in the last couple of weeks and feeling really good.
The explosiveness looks like it's still there when you call on it, despite the hamstring.
Yeah, and I think that's where you got to get to with hamstring injuries, is without having to think about it, you just take off just instinctively.
Just trust in it.
And in my position, I have to. So, you know, I wanted to play last week, but I didn't get that opportunity because they wouldn't let me. But
you flew your family over as well, didn't you?
Yeah, mate. Well, they already booked it before they knew I wasn't going to be playing, which was a shame. But a few of them got to come back on the weekend, just gone.
How emotional was that Harker? We've obviously all seen the vision. It looked pretty touching.
It's amazing.
It was, mate.
Yeah, it was pretty good, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I liked it.
Well, the thing a lot of people don't know is it wasn't just any Harker. It was the one I've sort of grown up with from my tribe in New Zealand and my family. And you know, something I'm really proud of, and the best part about it was my two little brothers were leading the haka, and the rest of the people doing it were my families, like my uncles, my mum, my cousins, and you know, and the thing about family is, and footy is, they ride the emotion just as
Absolutely,
much
yeah.
with you, if not more, you know, and with the amount of like publicity that you get, whether it's positive or negative, they ride high on the good times, and then when it's negative, it affects them more than it affects me. You know, I'm used to it now, but that takes its toll on your family.
Yeah, because they can't fix it. Yeah, we can control our performances and we take responsibility for it, but they have to sit there and watch it all unfold, and sometimes it's not good.
And they're not as mentally trained as what we are in copying that criticism.
Well, you get hardened, don't you? You know, the more you go through certain things.
But it still hurts. I mean, no one likes reading bad stuff about them. No one likes reading about a bad performance. You know you've played bad. You know, no one likes reading about it, but at the end of the day, some people use that as motivation to try and play better the next week, and I just got to the stage where, you know what, it's different people's opinion. You can't have everyone love you. Not everyone's going to like you. I think in the first few years of my career, it was a battle with wishing everyone loved me.
Yeah.
You know, and now I know people are not going to like me, and I'm happy with that. That's fine, because I don't like everybody as well.
How does it feel when you read that the Dragons are making an offer to Corey Norman?
I'm fine with that, mate, because the good thing about myself and Mary is we have a great, honest and open relationship with being honest with what's happening. And the good thing about all that is they tell me this stuff before it happens. And from my point of view, like I've said to Mary from the start, if you think there's someone younger and that's going to be better for the club long term, sign them. I've got no problem
with
that.
Another selfless move.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, not just that, mate, because the Dragons gave me an opportunity to come back to rugby league. And they don't owe me anything. I said to Mary, I owe you, thank you for the opportunity. And I'm trying to repay that by playing on the field, but just being injured, mate, so can't do that.
Just speaking of Mary for the minute, is he starting to feel the pressure at all? The Dragons clearly...
The whole organisation is, mate.
Yeah.
From the top down to the bottom. And I think it reflects in the way we're playing a bit. Just lacking confidence and starting to doubt ourselves with the ball. And when you get told you can't score tries... There's something seems to happen when you get down near the try line that you try harder to score and put more pressure on yourself. And you know, last year we were leading the comp in repeat sets at the start of the season, and you know, this year we're nowhere near that. I think we're just trying to score instead of build pressure, and that comes with that pressure from the outside, and I think the pressure that we're putting on ourselves.
Have there been some consistent messages in training in terms of what you need to fix up from week to week to get to where you want to get to?
Yeah, and it's not from the lack of working hard and not from the lack of trying. It's, if anything, sometimes we're trying too hard and focusing on too many negative things. And I think the message over the last couple of weeks has been trying to encourage us to play footy a bit more and back ourselves and back the skills that we're good at, because I think we've been so caught up in focusing on the negatives, it's having an impact on our psychological thinking when it comes to the games. And we just need to clear our minds, get that stuff out of the heads and, you know, go back to what you enjoyed playing when you were young and playing some footy.
We talked about this before, Benj, that when there's so much focus externally about you not scoring points, you go into the game with that mindset of feeling like scoring points is the answer to the result. Yet, if I look at the Dragons, they led the comp midway through last year on the back of their defence. And then they won games 16-12, 16-14. 16-6, it didn't matter, but they were winning footy games and they were happy and the environment there was good. And that was built on the back of their defence. So at the moment, they're going into games worrying about scoring points, losing that focus of their defence. So they're trying to score points to feel like they tick the box.
So your focus can wander a bit because of external pressures, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And then your focus on the game then becomes distracted. And as Benji said, they get down near the try line and they feel like they've got to score all the time to feel like that they're proving other people right.
Right.
You know, but if they start to just trim things back a little bit, simplify things and build it on the back of their defence, they can have a really good back end of the year. They're only 2 points out of the eight.
Yeah, that's the other thing, mate. Like, you know, there's a lot of teams that can't make the eight now, but we're still a chance. So I think we've had a bad 3 week period, right? And it just takes 1 week to turn it around.
Yeah.
You know? And there's no bigger occasion than the Bulldog on a Friday night
it's
at ANZ Stadium.
Absolutely.
For us to do that. Yeah. So I think if we can get some of that stuff out of our head and just worry about the positives of what we're doing well, I think it'd go a long way towards us improving.
Is it much of a distraction when you start the year with Kurt Mann, he's going to be your fullback, a ball-playing fullback, and then when things don't go to plans and you have to move things around, you obviously spend the preseason, you know, thinking that you're going to play a certain way with these people in key positions.
Yep.
Does that muddle you up if the plan doesn't go according to script?
Not muddle you up, because there probably hasn't been a season where the plan hasn't gone to script after a preseason of planning stuff. But, you know, I think what you summed up then is a lot of inconsistencies around positions and change and, you know, injury with myself being out. So we've had a different spine for a lot of the weeks this year. But at the end of the day, that inconsistency is rubbing off on the field, mate, and it's not good enough.
All right, boys. Well, we appreciate you sticking around after NRL 360.
Thanks for having
join us in the pod.
Cheers. Absolutely.
Nick second, so he's on two podcast games, and Benji, no doubt, will be back
cracking.
It'll be interesting to see the ratings, won't it? My ratings last time were extremely high, Benj.
What will be interesting is to see how many listeners drop off when Ben Eichen joins the podcast.
Yeah, well, actually, hold on, I can hear the clicking. Here he comes.
Well, the boys are gone, and BI has taken his spot, mate. Some big shoes to fill, big seat to fill with those two. It was a cracker of a first seg.
It sounded like... Oh, I mean, I only come in at the end, but you were cracking jokes, and most of them...
They're funny guys.
At my expense.
Yeah. They are talented guys. We were talking about... The Mick Ennis news, obviously.
What happened?
Stubbed his toe. Nothing big, nothing major. Yeah. But you obviously spoke to Mick on NRL 360 on Tuesday night, all about the retirement news, which opens up a whole another can of worms. Who succeeds him in the number 9 jersey? Now, I want to talk about a premiership window, and this is something that we hear a lot about. Whether you know there's a specific time frame to win a title, and you know maybe if you miss it, it's gone. Are the Sharks in a spot now where their premiership window is closing, especially with Luke Lewis's future in the air, Paul Gallen not getting any younger?
No, I think we've had this conversation from a broader perspective earlier in the season, because there was some talk around Ennis and Gallen and Luke Lewis, etc., Hyington, you know, some of those experienced heads that perhaps move on, and if they lose them, you know, does the window close? But I don't think so. I mean, James Maloney was brought to the club as an experienced playmaker. I think Wade Graham is developing into one of the best ball-playing back rowers, funnily enough, since Gavin Miller. You know, I mean, it's not a game where you can do the things that Gavin Miller used to be able to do, but he is tough. He's now made his way into the representative scene. Not to mention Jack Bird went there this year. Chad Townsend was being mooted as a potential halfback solution because New South Wales didn't know where they'd land. So just taking the successful halves combo from Clubland. And, of course, Valentine Holmes well and truly comes back onto the radar for Queensland next year. So if Shane Flanagan can recruit as well going forward as he has done up until this point, then no, the premiership window doesn't close. Because for the great clubs, it never does.
Yep.
It never does. You look at Melbourne, you look at Brisbane, you look at the Bulldogs under Des Hasler, at Manly before that. And the reason these clubs maintain their success is because they can be ruthless, they can make tough decisions when's required, and because of their consistent performances, their ability to get into the top 8 year after year, their fans have this expectation that they're going to play finals every year, so they continue to invest.
Following on from that line of thinking, clearly now the hooker has got to be the priority moving forward for the Sharks. They've got to decide who their first choice hooker is for next season, and they've got to get them in.
Can I ask a question to both of you?
You can ask me anything.
If you had the opportunity and the funds to get anyone in the competition to replace Michael Ennis, there wouldn't be a long list of players that could come in and immediately do the job.
You're going Robbie Farah.
As well as he's been doing it.
Well, I'd get Cameron Smith, but he's never leaving Melbourne.
But the list doesn't run overly
deep.
No,
there's not a great list. No.
Benji said just before that Ennis got Dally M hooker of the year last year. He'll probably get it this year. So that shows you the form he's been in and
there
how
you
difficult it is to replace.
And what I'm saying is because that list is so short, you can bet your bottom dollar that the guys that are above Mick on the list or sit beside him on the list are getting very well looked after by their current employer.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's a tough position for Shane Flanagan
Except if it's Robbie Farah. Or are you thinking Robbie Farah is not on that same level?
No, absolutely. Well, I mean, Robbie Farah is the man that's kept Michael Ennis out of a Blues jersey. Yeah, in recent times. So if Robbie Farah is prepared to move and be coached by Shane Flanagan and he's wants to get out of this mess he's in at the moment over at the West Tigers, then absolutely jump at the chance.
How much do you think it would be reasonable for the Sharks to pay towards Farah's wage next year if that was the case?
Well, here's the thing. I believe, it's my understanding that the Tigers have reached the point where maybe they were getting a bit precious last year with how much they were prepared to let Robbie go, that now it's...
They'll take anything.
Please come. I mean, it may be down as low as 200,000, 150 grand a year.
Yeah.
You know, so they're still left with, you know, 850, you know...
On their cap.
It'd just be disastrous. And I mean, that's sad to think if you're a West Tigers
fan. But you say it's going to be disastrous. It would be disastrous for them to continue operating the way they are for another 12 months.
Absolutely. Oh, agreed. I think that'd be more disastrous.
Yeah. Do you think Jason Taylor buys himself another 12 months? And I know we're getting onto the Tigers here, but does Jason Taylor buy himself another 12 months? Because he can go to his board and say, look, I told you we needed to get Robbie Farah out, and the only way we could get him out is to field a team that's effectively $1 million under what our competition is. So you've got to give me more time. Mm-hmm. Is that a logical argument?
I don't think you can make that argument, can you? Like,
what board's going to cop that as an excuse?
He was the coach knowing the roster that he had when he got there. And you roster management, as we've spoken about, is a big part of coaching. So to go to a board and say, look, the goalposts are moved because I said that I didn't want this player, even though I knew he was there and under contract when I arrived. So I now want an extra season or two to prove myself. I just don't think that argument washes.
But is it fair to say that Robbie Farah has made this as difficult for Jason Taylor as Jason Taylor has for himself?
Yeah, but you could have rubbed a crystal ball a year ago and known that'd be the case.
Really?
If you tried. Of course. We've all known that Robbie Farah can be a difficult character for coaches to work with.
You've only got to look at his past history. Mick Potter left the Tigers and Robbie Farah had a big part in that decision.
I mean, that's what was reported. Yeah. I've never heard those. Well, whether that been admitted to by Robbie Farah.
I don't think he ever would. Would he? Would you? Would you put your neck on the line and admit that you've cost a job?
No, but whether he did intentionally or not, it was the power that he was wielding that got out onto the airwaves when the Gordon Tallis thing.
He told Gordon Tallis allegedly that Mick Potter can't coach.
Yep.
That kicked off, you know, the cycle of events that led to Mick Potter's demise.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's got a rap sheet. Whether he deserves all the sort of blame that he gets or not.
Let's get this back onto the Sharks. So knowing that, I mean, would it be an attractive recruitment decision then for Shane Flanagan, if you're to believe what's been reported around Robbie Farah, to get someone like that who's supposedly and allegedly divisive?
I think I personally think when you've got a Paul Gallen in your roster and you know that Paul Gallen he's the leader and the controller of the player group and he's friends with Robbie Farah, I think you can have some confidence that you'd be able to keep it all under control.
And what's the terms of the contract? Do you let them play their last year together? Is that what you're thinking?
Well, this is the whole thing. Do you want to invest in a player, get him trained up to your style of football for 1 year, or do you invest in the future? So is Robbie Farah worth a 1 year investment? This premiership window that we speak about, does it give you one other genuine crack at winning another title, or do you invest? That's a decision that Shane Flanagan and Lyle Gorman and co need to make.
And I would absolutely make it in the positive for a couple of reasons, because at the moment, Robbie Farah's legacy is being tainted.
Yep.
And he has a chance, if he can, to go to another club that's in a premiership window, perhaps win a comp, show the world, you know, what the Tigers are missing out on, what the Tigers could have had if it had gone another way, down there in the Shire.
You'd think the ball's almost in Cronulla's court in a way, in that sense. Like, if they decide that Farah is the guy to come in for a year, you'd think that they could probably make it happen from here.
Yeah, the beauty is, when you're winning, you're attractive to other players. James Seguiaro's over in the Super League, so he's looking for an NRL club. No doubt he would love to join a franchise like the Sharks. And I've also heard a whisper that Michael Leisha could be on the outer at the Bulldogs. There's been a bit of talk around Moses Mbai perhaps moving from 6 to 9.
Leisha, I know where this is going.
He did start his career in Cronulla, and that, of course,
would open it up
for Kieran Foran to reunite with Des Hasler.
Wow.
Yeah,
no. That's explosive from you.
It's explosive.
We love a whisper.
Yeah,
we love a rumour, and we will get to the rumours segment shortly.
But nowhere near as explosive as the moves you were pulling on social media,
please,
with the referees and in the wrestling ring. And is it the Maroubra Lions?
Maroubra Lions. Oh, yeah.
He's been everywhere, hasn't he?
Oh, it's brilliant.
But what about you on the putt-putt course, getting the kids involved?
Bingo. I want to retire soon.
Guilty.
I need a young Rory McIlroy.
Isn't that why they're bringing Mick Ennis in?
Listen, while we're on our own personal exploits in the sporting world, last time we discussed your soccer season.
Here we go.
You were bragging about dominating the team, led by our executive producer of rugby league here, Ben Jones. The tables have turned.
Can I let you in on a little secret about the weekend's game?
Yeah.
Ben Jones was on the field when my side was up 1-0. Ben Jones left the field, sat on the bench while his team scored 2 goals, got up 2-1. Then Ben Jones came onto the field for the last 5 minutes while they hung on for their 2-1 victory.
This is brilliant.
So Ben Jones has been bragging.
I feel a sound bite. coming on maybe finds its way into Ben Jones's email.
Well, he listens to the podcast. I mean, he sent
who
me
doesn't?
He sent me the intel.
Yeah.
Because he wanted the wrongs righted.
I've been sitting on that because I knew that I could turn the tables back on Ben Jones.
So he's a non-contributor.
Non-contributor.
Wow. And you guys are still above them on the ladder.
We still are.
Get it back on to what everybody wants us to talk about.
Back
NRL.
On track. Yeah, just before we finish up on Robbie Farah in MarketWatch, foxsports.com.au, every Wednesday morning, we're reporting that Elijah Taylor could be heading to rugby. He's attracted interest from Super Rugby and European Rugby. But if Robbie Farah is to leave the Tigers, could free up enough cap space to help keep him at the West Tigers. He's been in phenomenal form. It seemed like to me, since he left Penrith, the Tigers have just gone up another gear with Elijah Taylor in their side.
Yeah, he's very creative in and around the rucks. He can play tough. He can punch out big minutes. And anytime you're looking for points, I reckon someone that can bring both facets of the game, that they go close to being invaluable because normally it's the creative players that tend to be weaker in other areas. But I reckon Elijah Taylor's got the balance perfect because if you give him the role of head down, ass up, we just want to play through the middle, yep, play straight, yep, and limit our passing, he can do that for you and do it well. But put him on an edge, either as a ball runner or a playmaker, and he's good in both areas. Fantastic.
It's interesting to me that he'd be on the radar of the rugby clubs because generally speaking, the rugby clubs sort of go for the outside backs and the flashy players. So they must have seen something in Elijah Taylor that suggests to them that he can make that transition.
What do they call it? Is it the breakaway? The Phil Ward, George Smith type?
Breakaway.
Yeah, yeah.
And he does have a pedigree
That's one of the most technical positions on the field, though. So you've got to learn so much.
And difficult, in terms of toughness required. Like I always said that the Phil Ward, George Smith types of rugby union are the ones that could cross over to rugby league.
Yeah.
Because they put their heads where most people wouldn't put their feet and get through a lot of work, which at the peak of his powers was a real strength of Elijah Taylor, wasn't it? I mean, I can remember him, back-to-back-to-back at the Panthers and before that the Warriors, breaking through the 50-tackle barrier regularly.
Yeah. Well, he played rugby until he was 16, and that's when he entered the Warriors system.
He's got the background.
So he has the background there, obviously has a passion for it, so we'll wait and see how this transpires.
Just while we're on the rugby quickly, it's worth discussing that Jarryd Hayne, the Waratahs have decided they're flat out not going to offer him, they're not going to make an offer to him at all. So that's an exclusive on foxsports.com.au on Tuesday afternoon. One of our rugby journalists picked that up. They talked to the Waratahs CEO and he said, no, we're not making
it. They give a reason?
I think basically it is that they don't want to go the quick fix type direction. They say that there's some issues in terms of New South Wales rugby as a whole that they want to change the system and the way they develop their talent and stuff like that from the top down. So they don't want to have quick fixes coming into their system.
Wow.
Fair point. BY, you'd be happy to know that this week on the rumours front, very light. So just the two that we're going to get through this week.
So it's the number. It's not the quality of the rumours a lot.
Well, maybe a little.
What's your strike?
Column B.
Have we figured out his strike rate yet, BG?
I haven't been keeping a running
tally. You know what? I will say this in defence of my rumours segment. Over the last couple of weeks, we've had a bloody good strike rate.
Have we?
We had the Folletti Matteo, which got confirmed that he's off to Salford.
Was that last week?
We had Luke Burgess here as well.
Was that last week?
Maybe.
Yeah, I think it was.
The week before. Yeah. So, based on last week.
Danny Ocken wasn't here, so didn't happen, is what he's saying.
Tony Williams, I think it's become public that the Dragons have shown some interest in him, which started off in the rumours segment.
Okay.
So there's a little bit of credibility, a glimmer of hope for this segment.
It's always good for a new show, a glimmer of credibility.
Well, let's see if we can sort of lift it above a glimmer. This week we've got Tau Tau Moga and where he potentially might end up.
A few whispers around that the Broncos, Wayne Bennett, could be in the market.
Well, they are lean, aren't they, in the outside backs?
Yep. And they've got Greg Eden leaving to head back to England. Lachlan Morant is off contract.
Hasn't there been talk that Jack Reid was going as well?
He might. Well, it's not so much that he's going. It's chronic whether or not he's a real player. I think he's got chronic arthritis. So they've told him that
his shoulder joint.
Yep. Has to play through the pain because surgery won't fix his issue.
Jeez.
That's sad.
That is sad.
They miss him on that left edge. I mean, it's been... it's just been leaking far too many points, far too many poor decisions. The Milford, Alex Glenn, whoever plays, two in, and Corey Oates. I mean, Corey Oates didn't have a game to remember, but I reckon Jack Reid, while he's not a flashy sort of James Roberts with the ball, I tell you what, in defence, he's rock solid for the Bronx, yeah.
He sure is. So it'll be interesting to see whether they do actually make an approach to Moga.
Okay, and the other one's Francis Molo. Where might he be headed?
Another Bronco. Bit of talk around the Canberra Raiders, handing him a lifeline. Now, Molo, he was the subject, I suppose, of another shoulder charge in the Q Cup. He was involved in the incident which saw a player lose his life, James Ackerman, last year.
Which is really tough on him. The Broncos had to rally around. And in fact, to their credit, I think the most supportive group was the Ackerman family.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just, I mean, it breaks
down. Because they're league lovers and they saw it as as an accident. These things happen on the field and, but it'd be so hard to recover from, even if you got that support, I think.
And I reckon Frankie Molo struggled for a while with that. And it would be good to see him realise his NRL dream and bed down a contract with another club and really make a fist
of it. A change of scenery could make the difference.
He can play, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. It's just all about what he does off the field. Frankie Molo, I mean, he's really got to work hard to keep his weight where it needs to be. So the fitness side of things is not his strength.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go. A gangbuster episode of Market Watch. That's round 22 done and dusted. We want to thank Benji Marshall and Mick Ennis for joining us in the studio for a chat. That's all for this week, guys. Be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Wooshka. Shout out to all the listeners out there if you're joining us on Wooshka for the first time. That's all for this week. We'll see you next week.